This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com, Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Who doesn't love a good siege? You know I love a good siege. Sieges have always and will always fascinate me. I can't promise you I won't do a siege every day for the rest of this week, Chris. We'll just do siege week. Oh, that'd be sweet, right? We might actually do that. Wait a minute. Do we just have an idea? Live on the radio, we thought of something. This is wild. It's like we do this for a living. But one of, if not my favorite sieges of all time, is the Siege of Alesia. This is Julius Caesar painting his masterpiece as a general. What he did, I am sure others have done it in history. I will, however, tell you, though, and you're welcome to email me and correct me if you know who else did it. I've never seen it before, and we'll get to exactly what that is. But allow us to set the stage of Julius Caesar in Gaul. And remember, when we talk about Gaul, that's France. That's modern-day France. And remember this, because this is going to come into play a couple times in our setup to our story here. It is human nature. You do it. I do it. Jewish producer Chris does it. It is human nature to simplify and oversimplify things so they're more easily consumable. Easier to remember, easy to consume. It's part of the reason. I mean, what do I do? I don't give you too many names. I don't give you too many places. I don't even give you specific dates on November 4th, 1942, because you're not going to remember it. That part of the story will not be remembered. You'll remember the basic concepts, a few high points, and you'll move on. and Verka Gedderick got with Mr. Robinson and then John Roberts, and then and you're trying to remember that and you're missing the point of the story. So I don't do it. There are detail nerds out there who will want those, and they're easily available. Like I said, there are 10,000 resources on this stuff. But part of the oversimplification we do is we talk about Germania or Gaul. Or, look, we do it here at home, the Indians, as if it's one thing. They're so different. And not only are they different, because, look, this is what we do with the Indians. Well, I mean, I know there were different tribes and then different things, but they're all, I mean, kind of, they all were kind of the same. No, they were not kind of the same. They ran the gamut. Peaceful, gentle, farming people, nomadic hunters, people who existed almost exclusively on warfare and slave trade, and they were all over the map. Not the same, not friends, not even close. Same skin color, that's about it. Gaul was exactly this way, and this is going to come into play in our story. Gaul, the Gallic tribes. The Gallic tribes were all over the map. All over the map. A lot of cultural similarities, sure, more than the Indian tribes, actually. But they, in many ways, hated each other. They didn't think of themselves as Gaul. They would have thought of themselves as their tribe. They wouldn't have known what you were talking about if you referred to them as Gaul. Gaul? Who's that? Never met him. It's just not how they thought. Now, I don't want to just act like it's just us people looking at history who did this. The Romans simplified things too. Don't get me wrong. The people on the ground and the commanders knew about the different tribes and the rivalries and such. But if you're a regular citizen in Rome, you're a Roman blacksmith, you don't know squat about the individual tribes. It's all Gaul to you. What do we do? Are we slapping the Gauls around again? Nice. Sounds good. Back to my horseshoes. So, Julius Caesar is not Julius Caesar yet at this point in our story. He is an uber, uber talented young man. We're just going to take a step away here for a moment because we're talking about probably my favorite historical character ever, and we're going to tell my favorite historical story ever because it's so absurdly cool. Julius Caesar, as a young man, I believe he was 18 years old, that he had already shown uncanny genius. He was cocky beyond all belief. Probably, when I say genius, people overuse that term from what they understand. We have so much of his writings and so many things written about him. He legitimately was probably a genius, somebody with an IQ higher than you or I put together. He just was one of those people. He gets captured as a young man. He's from a good family name, but not really wealthy yet. Not poor, not wealthy. Gets captured by pirates. This is not unheard of in ancient times. Gets captured and he's being held ransom by these pirates. One, he chooses to write and recite poetry and sing, driving the pirates crazy. So they're screaming at him, "Shut up, please!" They then put out a ransom on him. Caesar is outraged at how low the ransom is, insists that the pirates must raise the ransom amount for him because he says he's worth much more than that. On my life. And then, obviously, they kind of grow to love the guy. And at some point, he flat out tells them, as a hostage of pirates, "When I get out of here, I'm going to come back here and crucify you all for this." He tells them that while he's at their mercy. They could have pulled his fingernails out at a heartbeat. He does get released, does not run back home and say, "Mom, it was so terrible." Immediately goes a couple towns over, raises enough troops to run back there, find the pirates, and crucify all of them. That was young Julius Caesar. Extremely talented young man. And everybody in Rome knew it. He was talented beyond belief. Rises and politics his way into power. And eventually becomes a consul of Rome. And he's part of, and I really don't want to give you too much because it sucks because the details like I talked about, but he's part of what is called, and this will matter throughout all your Roman history studies, the First Triumvirate. Basically, the story was this. There was uber accomplished, uber talented Pompey Magnus. Pompey Magnus was this super stud general, had triumphs, a Roman hero, a legend. Eventually, Caesar would defeat him in battle later on, but that's long after this. That's another story. A legend. And then there's another guy in Rome, Marcus Licinius Crassus. He is the guy, maybe the wealthiest man who ever lived. Hang on.
Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
You need to diversify. I've been telling you that, and now you're seeing it, aren't you? You just saw what happened with the markets. When I tell you about a gold IRA from Gold Alliance, I want you to understand, I'm really not trying to scare you. I'm not. I'm just trying to inform you that uncertainty is out there. When you print money like this, when you spend money like this, let me tell you, that story ends one way. And it ends that way every single time. You don't have to pull all your money out of the markets. I'm not telling you to do that. Keep your stocks, keep your bonds. But you have to get a gold IRA as part of your portfolio. Go to goldalliance.com/Jesse. That's goldalliance.com/Jesse. Protect that retirement. The First Triumvirate was an odd mix. You had Super General Pompey, you had mega, mega rich Crassus, and you had Gaius Julius Caesar, and they all were different, and it should be noted, they were not big fans of each other, especially Pompey and Crassus. But Pompey needed certain things, and Crassus needed certain things, and Julius Caesar needed certain things, and they all kind of got together. Because they all, while they didn't like each other, realized they had many shared enemies and they had many shared goals. And they said, wait a minute. A man needs friends in this world. Why don't we just get together? They get together. Eventually, Julius Caesar rises to the position of consul. Remember, that was basically the Roman president before Julius Caesar. But that's another story. But his time as consul was coming to an end. And here was the problem Julius Caesar was facing. He had many, 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 many enemies. His enemies were going to drag him through the court system for his crimes he allegedly committed. I should probably take a side note here and say he undoubtedly committed them. Julius Caesar, while he's my favorite person, was not exactly squeaky clean. Probably committed these crimes, but that doesn't make the crimes that he was being accused of any less politically motivated. His political enemies were lining up to take him down once he was no longer consul. Why were they waiting then? Because the Romans had this law, and I still can't decide if I love it or hate it. They had this law. You could not be prosecuted for crimes while you were in office. As soon as you're done with office, it's on, though. So they'll just line up and wait. So Julius Caesar needed an office. His time as consul's up. What office is he going to get? He gets what's called a proconsulship. He gets named proconsul. And what you need to think of this as, he gets named governor. It's not governor. It's more like a general dictatorship. But he's governor of certain areas. You could be a proconsul here, a proconsul of there. He gets named proconsul of Gaul. I don't want to nerd out or overwhelm you with information, but it's important that you realize Gaul is not all Gaul. Just the northern part of Italy. Like if you're cruising up Italy, you can picture that boot. Before you get to the Alpines, you are going to get to what's called Cisalpine Gaul. Now, don't worry about the name. Just know that that was considered Gaul too. But because they were so close to Rome, they were really Romanized and civilized. Then you cross the Alps and you get to the Transalpine Gaul. And they're also pretty Roman, not quite as Roman. But then you go from there up into the heart of France or Gaul, and they're getting more and more wild. Rome, by now, had a very good relationship with these people, with the Gauls who were close to them. Caesar gets named proconsul of these areas. I'm here. I'm Caesar. I am not here to bug anybody. Yes, I have some legions with me. Yes, I happen to be a very, very ambitious man, but I'm not here to do anything. Now, this next part gets a little bit hairy. It gets a little controversial because it depends on who you believe. I have read quite a bit on it. I don't know how you can follow any different way. This next part is not Caesar's fault. Caesar gets approached and gets told by his Gallic friends, the other Gauls that are friends of his, that he's really kind of proconsul over. Hey, there's this other Gallic tribe. They are packing up and they are moving our way. We don't want them here. Remember, I told you the Gauls didn't get along. And this is a huge tribe. I'm not even gonna tell you the name. I'm not gonna tell you. I've already told you too many. They're coming our way. What do we do? Caesar has been requested to go stop them. So Caesar, as is requested, he's proconsul, packs up his legions, goes over, checks in with these guys. I'm not going into that whole fight today, but he beats the living crap out of them and sends them scurrying back home because he's Caesar. And there's an old saying in Rome. I forget who said it. It was one of these Romans or somebody said it. I think it was after the fact, saying Rome conquered the world in self-defense. Caesar gets done slapping around this Gallic tribe. And another Gallic tribe that's under Caesar. They come to Caesar and they tell him, hey, Caesar, there's these Germans. There's this super powerful German warlord and his tribe. They're giving us a lot of problems too, treating us like crap. Would you mind going up there and handling him too? And Caesar, as was requested of him, is now on the march again and goes, and this is another really cool campaign I'm not going to go into today, beats the crap out of these Germans and sends him scurrying home. This is all going very well. Oh, it was Livy? Oh, Livy said it. Livy was the guy who said Rome conquered the world in self-defense. Anyway, so Caesar now has saved these Gauls a couple times as requested, but he decides he's going to set up shop here. I like Gaul. You know what? I like this spot right here. Remember how you asked for my help a couple times? I think we're going to set up shop right here. Oh, you don't mind, right? Oh, you do mind. Well, I mean, if you mind too much, you should know what I'll do. I mean, you've already seen what I'll do, and it kind of goes that way. Caesar, hey, I'm just settling in. And already these, quote, wars he's fought are being very, very, very hotly debated back in Rome. His enemies are already screaming, this is an illegal war, because the Senate has not authorized these wars at all, and they had to back in Roman times. To which Caesar and his defenders, including me, would reply, I wasn't doing a war. I had it requested of me to go protect the people I'm proconsul of. That's not a war. I'm defending somebody. Now, did Caesar really defend them zealously? Yeah, probably. We're going to fast forward through a lot of Gallic fighting here. Just know this. Tensions go to a boiling point with the Gauls, even the friendly Gauls. Caesar conquers Gaul, he thinks. He then goes home for a little while. And when you're Caesar and you're ambitious, part of this is a propaganda campaign as well. Propaganda is not the right word for it, but part of this is you want those newsletters coming out back at home where everybody can get up in the morning and read the morning paper. Oh, honey, did you see what Caesar did? Caesar's a celebrity now and a celebrity general, and the Romans love them some Caesar. And Caesar knows this. And Caesar, actually, we have Caesar's diaries. To this day, you can go read them. Caesar's penning his own diaries and sending them back home for publication. Hey, check out what I did today. Hey, look how well this went. Oh, we almost lost here, but I stepped up and did something really heroic. It was awesome. You should read about it in tomorrow's paper. That kind of thing. There's a lot of that. But Gaul, it turns out, was chafing under the Roman rule quite a bit. Again, these were wild, free people. And Gaul decides we have one chance and one chance only to cast these Romans out of Gaul. We must do the impossible and join together. And joining together, let's talk about that in just a second. I say the joining together thing. You know, I'm a American Indian tribe homer, big time. And I'm not one of these downtrodden tribal peoples homer. I'm not. I don't root for lots of them. I don't really care for many of the African tribes too much. Shaka Zulu's tribe was really cool. But I'm also not hugely familiar on them. I'm just not that big on them. The Afghanistan tribes to this day, not that big on them. Maybe it's because I'm an American. I don't know what it is, but I'm an American Indian tribe fan. Always have been, always will be. The Gauls are about to band together. Something very, very, very few tribal peoples have ever brought themselves to be able to do. However, you're going to see how the story ends. One, two, it's one of the common things people will say about the American Indians. Oh, they should have banded together. Man, that's so easy to say. They hated each other so much and had been killing each other for so long. And they had different tribal structures. Band together under whom? I mean, even the tribes themselves, like the Sioux. Well, which Sioux? There were like three major bands of Sioux, and even in the major bands of Sioux, the different tribes would have different chiefs, and this tribe's chief would not acknowledge your tribe's chief as being in charge. It's just, what I'm trying to get at is, it's easier said than done to just say they should have banded together. Maybe they should have. I would argue back to you, that would have been no guarantee of success either, as we're about to find out. But the Gallic tribes know Caesar is coming. Caesar is capable. He's not an oddity to them by now. They very much know who they're dealing with, and they know this is going to be difficult. They know it so much, they do something that, I mean, there are few examples of this in history. As tribal peoples, and I keep saying tribal peoples, it's probably giving you a false sense of what the Gauls are. Yes, they're barbaric and they're tribal, but they have different traditions. Their nobles have armor too. Their nobles have steel swords too. They're not just a bunch of people with painted blue faces and sticks in their hands. Now, they're not nearly as equipped as the Romans, and they don't have the armor, and most of their armies aren't put together that way. However, these people have some stuff. But they're so desperate, and they know they're in so much trouble, they decide they are going to band together, and they're going to band together under one man. Remember, armies, there's a reason we have a commander-in-chief, even here in America. Armies must be led by one man. You do not share command at any level in the military. When times are tough, the Romans would often do this too. When times are tough, you turn to one man. Then when times are done, you can disperse power again as you should. But in military times, one guy. Take over. Lead us. You decide. And they turn to a guy named Vercingetorix, or Vercingetorix, depending on who you listen to or watch. Vercingetorix is a chief, a powerful chief. They turn to him and say, "You lead us. You will be our warlord. We are all banding together under you." And Vercingetorix says, "Okay, burn your house down." Let's wrap our minds around that for a minute. That is what he told them to do. He said, "We are only going to have a chance against Julius Caesar if you are willing to take that town of yours and burn it to the ground, and burn your crops to the ground." These were, for the most part, not nomadic peoples. They had settled cities and societies. Imagine that. Imagine how dire the threat would have to be for you right now, because it was as real to them as it would be for you right now. You go home, get the family out of the house, only one suitcase, whatever you can carry, and burn your house to the ground. In fact, the whole neighborhood, everyone has to do it. Come on, we're under attack, guys. It's got to be bad, doesn't it? I mean, the wolves have to be at the gates for you to do that. But for the most part, they did it. And remember, they did it so Caesar would not be able to resupply himself up in Gaul. It's not as if these barbaric peoples all over the world were not aware of the logistical problems of feeding an army. They knew. They knew Caesar had to feed his army too. They knew the best way to feed an army, if you're Julius Caesar, is to sack one of these cities and take everything in it. They started burning down all their stuff. Until they got to a place, well, you would know it today as Bourges, modern-day Bourges. They wouldn't burn theirs. "Nope, we got a good place here. Nope, I'm not. We'll have to find a different way." And wouldn't you know it, Julius Caesar, who was almost out of supplies, lays siege to Bourges, which completely resupplies Caesar's army. This part always broke my heart. Vercingetorix's strategy was working. He knew what he was doing. It was working. Remember, Caesar has about 50,000 to 60,000 men at this time. Vercingetorix has about 80,000 Gauls. He decides after the siege of Bourges, okay, we have to maybe try to engage Caesar a little now. They'd been avoiding him for the most part. They go up. They have a couple minor skirmishes, and he realizes this is just not going to work. And let's clarify why this is not going to work, because this is going to come into play here in a little bit. We love ideas like toughness. I'm tougher than that guy. It's just mental toughness. And look, mental toughness is great. It's important. Training and discipline wins wars. Training and discipline wins wars. You can be soft as chewed up bubble gum right now. And if I were to snatch you up and put you with a group of these Green Berets we have on the show all the time for a year, and you spent a year hiking, exercising, weapons training, shooting, drill after drill after drill after drill after drill, you would be a super stud after a year because you'd be trained that way. And if you were a highly trained dude and you decided you're just going to spend the next 10 years drowning yourself in beer and donuts, you're not what you were anymore. There is trained and there is untrained. The Roman army was a training machine. They trained all the time. They had a full-time military and they were dang proud of it. Training, communication, shields linked here, shields linked there. They would have, you know, a Roman phalanx. You can picture it. It wasn't like the old Greek ones. It was flexible. Oh, somebody's flanking us. Boom. One command. Now you have a line out there on that side. Now you're protected there. Oh, look, an individual from their tribe stepped out to try to show off. Boom. You have a command. Two Romans, not one. Two Romans step out from your line. Kill him. Step back instantly. Shields back up. It was a machine. That's why they routinely beat armies where they were far, far, far outnumbered all across the ancient world. Command, go. Command, go. Hang on. American Getarix realizes he does not want to tangle with the trained Roman army. Again, I outlined some of the training for the Romans, and you can admire it, and I do admire it. Understand that that training was enforced with a level of discipline you would not be comfortable with. You ever heard of decimation? Ever heard? You hear it in football all the time. We decimated them. Oh, we got decimated. Oh, gosh, it was a decimation. You know what decimation is? DEC, meaning 10th. A Roman unit commits some egregious error, retreats when they shouldn't, something like that. They would draw straws, for lack of a better way to put it, because they organized themselves in small units of 10. They would draw straws. The man who got the short straw would then be beaten to death by his other 9 friends in the unit in front of everybody else. Not only beaten to death by friends who would lay down their lives for him. You followed orders in the Roman Legion, period. You were disciplined in the Roman Legion, period. Or you feared what would happen to you more than what the enemy would do to you. Now, let's contrast that with the Gauls. And this, honestly, this is another one of those things. It is so funny how it spans the globe, this consistent theme. The Gauls were individuals. They fought for individual glory. And I mean, they're more free peoples, right? It's a freer society. But just like the Indian tribes, they would do things to prop up the individual, to save their honor. Honor was a big thing. Oh, that's insulting to me. I'm going to ride out from the group and I'm going to charge him. I must save my honor. Okay, now you're dead. The Indians had this for a while with counting coup, it was called. Counting coup is this. The Indians decided, not wrongly, that it's easier to kill a man than it is to ride out to somebody who wants to kill you, touch him with a stick without killing him, and I do mean touch him, and then ride away. They call that counting coup. You just humiliated him. You're so weak, I rode out and touched you and didn't even kill you and rode away. It's a huge honor. Well, okay, enjoy the honor. Boom, now I just shot you off your horse. Thanks for not chopping me in the head with an axe and just touching me with a stick. The Gauls would charge when they weren't told to charge. They would retreat when they're not told to retreat. They would individually just lose their minds. Very courageous. The Romans all wrote about how courageous they were. It wasn't a cowardice thing or anything. They just didn't have the discipline. Discipline and training wins wars, period. Well, these Gauls do not want to tangle with the Romans anymore, so Vercingetorix takes his 80,000 Gauls, cavalry and infantry, and he rides them up to a place called Alesia. Now, we're going to do this together. I'm going to see if you can Google image Alesia. Now, I've watched a documentary on this recently, so I know you can check this out visually. Let's just see if they'll give you a good idea of it. A-L-E-S-I-A. There's a couple drawings on there that actually are very helpful. Yeah, you know what? A Google image search would be very, very helpful. Ignore that stupid-looking one that has the fort on there. It's a gigantic plateau kind of shaped like an egg, a big oval-shaped plateau. You can see it. It still exists. If you would like, you can visit France and step foot on it to this day. Well, picture this. There was a town on top of that plateau with a fence, with a wall around it. And as you can imagine, that would be a really nice place to defend. We always make this mistake of picturing these old forts in old walled cities as some big, you know, it's on some big piece of flat ground with a stone wall around it. No, all these people, all the ancient peoples knew how to use natural formations to their advantage. There's nothing that beats a natural formation. You put your walls and fences up to improve on what's already there. Imagine how you could defend a place like that. Vercingetorix takes his 80,000 dudes, charges into that town, slams the door, and says, "Woo! Here we go. Now we have a plan." And his plan is this. They know they have 30 days, roughly, of supplies to hold out. He does not think Caesar will be able to take that city. Which, I mean, he's pretty much right. Doesn't think Caesar will be able to take that city. He also doesn't think Caesar will be able to resupply his army because Caesar will have to be outside of the city walls. You essentially have to forage for stuff if you're Caesar. His plan is simply to wait him out. Caesar gets there. He takes a look at it and he agrees with Vercingetorix. Well, we're not taking the city. We got to do something else. I've got an idea. Hang on.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Caesar needs to take this city. Well, he needs to defeat the people in it. He knows he doesn't. I mean, it's just not necessarily possible to go charging in there. He understands what this is going to be. This is now a siege, and we're going to see who's going to starve to death first. Now, I don't know if you can Google image search this enough to see what I'm talking about, but it wouldn't hurt to dig into it. If you'd like, you can do this during the break. Around that big oval plateau, there are surrounding hills that surround it. There's obviously a big valley around the plateau and surrounding hills. Caesar takes a look at these hills and thinks, well, I mean, if you're going to be on top, then I'm going to be on top. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
That's a really good question, Chris. Chris just asked me before I came back on the air, whatever happened to Michael Avenatti? I genuinely do not know. I think he's in jail. He might be in jail. Look at Bob. I bet you he's in jail. A guy like that. Look, I'm going to get back to the story in just a second. Chris distracted me. A guy like that, believe it or not, I actually was pretty merciful while he was losing his mind on TV every day. Because I can spot this stuff a mile away. As you know, I'm a man of many skills. And in all seriousness, though, I'm a man of very few skills. But one of them is I can spot trouble a mile away. There's a reason all my friends used to get busted at parties. Used to get busted doing this and busted doing that. And I have made so many stupid decisions in my life, and my record is pretty squeaky clean because I always knew this is going to be trouble. I'm going to duck out right about now. And it was always about 20 minutes before the cops showed up. And I spot it in people a mile away. Friends, but pre-wife, girlfriends, co-workers, whatever the case may be, I spot crazy. I spot high maintenance. All I have to do is get a whiff of it. Phew, I'm gone. Peace. Has saved me a lot of trouble in this life. And it always ends the way I think it's going to end. Michael Avenatti, from the first moment I saw that guy on television, I said, that guy is going to end up hanging himself in a hotel room one day or end up in prison. There's nothing there but trouble. That's a dude with problems. Oh, yeah, I called that one too. Oh, he's currently under house arrest. There you go, Chris. All right, back to my story. Caesar decides, and it is amazing. I almost want you to go look up a drawing of this when our story's done today. So you have the city all walled in on top. Caesar takes the hills all around the city and builds an 11-mile continuous wall all around that, along the hills. He encircles the city. Now, and this will come into play here in a few, there is one gap in the corner of Caesar's wall. It's where this big hill is. He couldn't construct it there. But when I say wall, you need to understand there's a huge, huge earth rampart where it made up a lot of the fence, and then a wooden fence on top of it. And then he had 23 readouts, essentially big towers where his men could stand and shoot things on top of that. He had ditches built in front of the wall so they couldn't cavalry charge it, multiple ditches. He had booby traps, tiny pits with little stakes inside of them that used to drive the Gauls crazy because, again, the Gauls weren't disciplined. They just go charging out there and get yourself killed. He had his Roman artillery set up. They're called scorpions. Picture a gigantic crossbow, and they had catapults too. And these things used to scare the Gauls to death who'd never seen anything like this in their lives. They'd fire these obviously high-speed projectiles. Sometimes they're sticks, arrows, rocks, whatever the case may be. But if you're a Gallic warrior and your whole life's been fought, you know, you're fighting spear to spear, and all of a sudden you're 100 meters from somebody and your buddy's head gets removed from his body by a rock that got shot by something, that's something like you've never heard of before. He builds a wall around it and just says, okay, well, now you're really boxed in and you can't get out. This is a problem for Vercingetorix because Caesar is finding ways to resupply his guys. And Vercingetorix is in this city, remember, not just with his 80,000 men, with the civilians who were there. He tries to break out with his cavalry a couple times, fails. And then, and this has got to be, this moment I am fascinated by. Fascinated slash horrified. I just, it almost doesn't seem real, but it happened. Vercingetorix gathers all the non-combatants in the city. And you know what that means, right? All the old people. The women, the children, he gathers them up and sends them out of the city toward the Romans so they don't eat up any more of the food that the warriors need to survive. And he sends them over to the Romans, thinking he's being slick, thinking the Romans will take them in as slaves and then have to feed them. Well, you're not going to outmaneuver Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar says, oh, no, I don't think we will take them in. Turn around and go back to the city, all of you. They turn around, go back to the city. Vercingetorix won't let them back in. All the non-combatants starved to death in the no man's land between the city and Caesar's wall on the outside. And the reason this fascinates me, I don't want to get too dark, but the reason this fascinates me is not necessarily for the Romans. I would assume there are plenty of Romans with a heart who don't necessarily enjoy watching women and children suffer, but at least these people aren't Romans. To the Romans, they would be beneath them anyway. But the men in the city, the Gauls in the city, Those are your people. What is going through your head watching and listening to your people, the innocent people amongst you, dying like that? What's going through your head? And you know that's not quiet, right? That's children begging, women begging, help us, at least take my baby. He's dying. And saying no? I mean, that has to be unbearable. I cannot believe the Gauls didn't break and let them back in. I can't believe it. Maybe it was just simply, you let them back in, we're all going to starve to death tomorrow. I don't know what it was, but, and that's terrible. Well, women or children or not, the Gauls are now in trouble because Caesar's just not starving to death. Vercingetorix gets word out, he gets it out of the city, that they need help now. He sends it to all the surrounding Gallic tribes and says, the bad news is we're under siege. The good news is Caesar is here. His entire army is here. If you come now, we can defeat Rome once and for all and be free again. And the Gauls answer the call. 250,000 Gauls gather together and begin marching towards Caesar and his 50 to 60,000 men. What are you going to do if you're Caesar? Well, there's a reason you're Julius Caesar. Caesar comes up with a plan. Do you remember the 11-mile wall boxing in Alesia? Caesar decides he's going to build another wall outside of that wall as an outside ring to guard against the 250,000 Gauls who are coming to relieve it. That's right. He's building a double ring around the city. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Part-time job, full-time hustle, all-time Shiro to all of us. You nurture, we listen. You teach, we thrive. You lift our spirits, but we've got to lay down the truth. It's time for you, our Shiro, to stretch for the stars. Start saving more for retirement now, so you can feel prepared and live your life to the fullest. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org/Shiro.
A message brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Caesar actually constructs this second wall. It is amazing they had the know-how to do things like this. The Roman engineering was just amazing. So he does. He boxes himself in a second time, an outer ring to protect from the forces from the outside. Now, the Gauls, 250,000 of them, show up. And back to what we were talking about training and discipline. The Gauls just simply could not get themselves organized. Vercingetorix, to his credit, was one of the only who ever did it. These 250,000 showed up, but they're not a 250,000-man cohesive unit with this guy in charge of this and these sub-commanders under here. It's 250,000 guys, different tribes, different bands, different commanders. And they can't seem to organize attacks at the same time. They think, well, we are 250,000 guys, he's 50 or 60,000 guys, and in their world, I guess in their defense, everything they've ever known says, well, we're about to win, let's get it done, because numbers get it done. It doesn't work that way against the Roman training and discipline and frankly, the Roman engineering. That's part of the reason Romans were able to beat these superior numbers all the time. I'll take my 60,000 dudes and my scorpions and my walls and my ditches over your 250 all day long. Have fun. Come on down. And so they would try to swarm the Romans at different times, and they would get slaughtered. And not only that, it's hard. Now, this is hard, especially pre-radio, obviously cell phone days. Ideally, in this situation, you would coordinate with the Gauls inside of the city so you could both attack at the same time, thus putting extra stress on the Romans. Make the Romans defend both walls at once. They couldn't even do that. The guys on the outside would swarm in, and then the guys in the city would get ready to get fired up and get ready to come out, and then the guys on the outside would already be defeated by the time the ones on the inside tried to charge out, and over and over and over again. And Caesar's not losing. And there were a couple very close battles. Remember that hill I told you that was very undefended? I mean, he couldn't build the wall there? Well, the 250,000-man Gallic force realized it too. They know this country very well. They send a huge unit up there. Apparently, the Romans were taking it on the chin. Caesar himself, very famously, throws on his red cloak. I mean, you might as well wear a neon sign. Throws on his red cloak and leads the charge outside of the fort to swarm around behind the Gauls. His men see Caesar is there, putting his life on the line right next to them. That matters a lot to the men in combat. They defeat the Gauls at that hill. That was really the moment where the Gauls lost it. After that, the Gauls, they start to go hungry. And that 250,000-man army, remember, different leaders, different tribes. You wake up one morning and it's 220 now. And you wake up the next morning and it's 195. And the next morning it's 180. And then you see how this goes, right? They may hate the Romans. They're not going to stay there and starve to death because there's no way on earth Gauls possess the logistical know-how to feed 250,000 men. And Julius Caesar knew it. Let's just wait. Those 250,000 guys look really great on paper. Generals to this day will make that mistake. Looks really good on paper. Those men look really good. Men need food. Men need water. Those tanks. Woo! Look at all these tanks. How much gas do you have? We need these attack helicopters. Oh, yeah, baby. How much ammo do you have for the cannons? These are the things that win and lose wars. 250,000 Gauls coming to relieve Vercingetorix at the siege of Alesia, they disappear into the mist. Vercingetorix knows it is over. In an attempt to save his people, admirably, I should say, man acquitted himself well to this day. I think at this site, there's still a statue of Vercingetorix. I believe it's at this site or close to this site. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Napoleon actually had this statue built. I could be wrong about that. But to his credit, Vercingetorix rides up to Julius Caesar, surrenders himself and his sword. Now, I would love to tell you that Julius Caesar welcomes him in with open arms. Pick up your sword. No. We are equals here. Let's please. It was an honorable fight. Go back home to your wife and your kids. I'll send you a Christmas card this year. Romans didn't do war like that. Romans did total war at all times. And you can talk about the cruelty of total war. And it is very cruel. Make no mistake about it. And you can talk about maybe the immorality of it. Okay, I'm not going to argue about that either. But let's take a step back from a macro level. How long did your favorite empire last? Romans understood very well, if there is something that needs to be removed, you remove it all the way. There's nothing more overrated in this life than half measures. If something needs to be done, you do it, and you do it all the way. Verkin Gederix, he was thrown into a Roman dungeon until the time came for Julius Caesar's triumph through the Roman streets, where he had him chained and paraded through town. I believe this was 6 years later. I don't want to act like this was 6 weeks. This man lived a life of, whew, it was rough. 6 years later. Now, he would have been under strict orders from Julius Caesar to keep him alive, so I'm actually sure he was well-fed and medically cared for, but he was not living pleasantly. And then after Julius Caesar's triumph, they took him down to the dungeon below the city and had him ritually strangled to death. That's an ugly end to a really cool story. The Gauls were pacified. However, let's go back to what we were talking about. Half measures. Doing things nicely. I hear a lot of screaming today about this ACB appointment to the Supreme Court. And you know what I'm seeing some on my side, on the right, I'm seeing some of this. Well, we don't want judges on the right. I don't want her to judge from the right. I want her just to be a constitutionalist and things like that. Stop lying. Stop lying to yourself and others. I want her to be a meat-eating, leftist-crushing super assassin. I want total victory.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, Ryan. You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. That's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.